Voters may soon be asked to approve a half-cent sales tax to repair and replace local schools. Meanwhile, arming safety officers at school, that lawsuit is being vetted in court. And football fans, last night was draft night here in Duval. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. Oh. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We have a great show on tap and all of the biggest stories of the week just ahead with our Friday roundtable. You can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you about Augie's quest, fighting ALS on the First Coast. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome freelance journalist Emily Block, new to the show. Hey, Emily, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thanks for being with us. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics back again.
Good morning.
Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union.
Good morning.
And regular contributor Charles Griggs.
Good morning.
So good to have all of you here, and so much happened this week. Lots to discuss. Everything from school safety to the Jaguars draft pick and more. But our top story this morning, Duval County voters could soon decide on a proposed half-cent sales tax to pay for a whopper of a bill, an estimated $1.95 billion school repair tab. District leaders say this is exactly how much money they need to replace, repair, and renovate Duval's aging public schools, which are the oldest school buildings in the state of Florida. Now, here's what's going on. The school board wants to hold a special election. Tentatively, it's set for November 5th. Yes, another election that you have to go out and cast a ballot for this sales tax referendum recommended by Superintendent Diana Green. So as we begin the hour, give us a call and let us know. Do you support a half-cent sales tax to pay for nearly $2 billion in school repairs in Duval? How do you think we should be addressing this issue of shoring up our aging school buildings? This has to go before the city council, too. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Charles Griggs, let's begin with you. This is an unbelievable amount of money, but Superintendent Diana Green says this is the only way to go. And she came to Jacksonville from Manatee County, where she was able to successfully sell a similar type of school funding plan. And so she's been down this road before. Can it work here in Jacksonville?
Well, this is nothing new. Previous Superintendent Nicola Vitti actually mentioned or said that this district needed money to do this same sort of thing, but he never floated a plan for it because it was dead on arrival when people started, you know, saying, well, how are you going to fund it? But this is why they hired Dr. Green, is because she, just for that purpose, because she did walk through and manage this whole process in Manatee County. So what we're looking at is the first steps of her trying to implement her blueprint for the type of improvements that she sees, or we've always known over a long period of time, that are necessary. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised that soon after we see something positive happen from this, if in fact that occurs, that we start to see some other asks for things like teacher pay.
Teacher pay, sure, which is another big issue. Now, if Duval voters approve this half-cent sales tax for schools, conservatively, it would generate $1.3 billion over 15 years. And A.G. Gankarski, this is one of the only options school board members have. We're one of the only counties that doesn't have funding set aside for this type of expenditure. So this is really the only way they're able to raise this kind of money.
Yeah, and that's going to have to be part of the sales pitch. And, you know, we've seen a number of referendum issues in recent years. St. John's County had a successful school tax referendum, a similar kind of thing. How they sold that, basically, they got out in the streets, raised awareness, knocked on doors, the ground game. We've seen a couple referendums here locally of late, the pension reform referendum and the best bet slots referendum. Those are sold in a different way. $2 million on TV, you had people on the streets also canvassing, but it was really a TV campaign. I'm not seeing Mayor Lenny Curry right now committing to this, so this may have to be kind of the grassroots kind of thing. If it's on a November ballot this year, then they're going to count on a low turnout election, and that could skew it also. I mean, people aren't going to come out to vote against this issue. So this mitigates in the favor of the school district should this get on the ballot. But I think you're going to see some gamesmanship on the city council before it gets there.
Right. Dan Scanlon, the city council has to approve this whole idea before it can go to the voters in November.
Well, you know, it's interesting. St. John's County, people were well aware of the needs of schools. They were building schools at a rapid rate. Literally, they were going to double and triple sessions at one point in order to hold on. So this was an issue that the voters of St. John's County knew very well because they were living it. The demographics where their kids are going to school. Here, I've been here for 30 plus years. I'm aware of some issues and some old schools, but never have I heard anybody say, wow, we've got schools that are 50 years old. We've got some that have to be replaced. If they need to be replaced now, how come we didn't hear they needed to be replaced 5 years ago? I've heard of new schools having roofing problems and drainage problems, but I've not heard anything about bad old schools.
Jackson had real issues.
Nicolae Vitti, when he was superintendent, he brought it up on this program a few times, but it wasn't at the top of the list of things that needed to be done. Now, Emily Block, it is. And let's talk about the fact, as Dan just said, that in conservative St. John's County, voters overwhelmingly approved more money for schools.
Yeah. Well, if you look into the current sales taxes across different counties, in neighboring counties like Clay and Putnam, they're also at a 1%. Large counties like Broward, West Palm Beach, and Miami-Dade are doing the same. They have a 1% tax. But St. John's is at the lowest. They have a half percentage tax, whereas like Hillsborough, for instance, has a 2.5% tax. So we're seeing things start to trend that way. Mm-hmm. And if you look at like the scope of Duval County schools, like Dan said, at least half of them were built over 50 years ago, excuse me. So out of the 157 schools, we have more than 50, more than that are old, and people are saying either they need to be replaced or they need to be, you know, scrapped and started over. So I think it goes into, well, what does that entail? What are we looking into? And how much is that going to
really break down? It's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Charles Griggs.
I was just going to say, this is about priorities. And while this community is always fast to embrace economic development projects and priorities, this is education. This is at the framework, the foundation of our community, having a good education system and making sure that you have those tools in place in order to serve the students and community, especially from a public perspective, is important. That discussion needs to be had. And since we haven't really invested in public education over the years, over so many decades, this might be the time to get it done.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, in St. John's County specifically and in Nassau County, in one instance, developers were setting aside properties for schools as they were building. That was part of the county mandate, mm-hmm. and in some cases, even building them. So again, those are two counties where they did know a long time they needed schools, and they mm-hmm. did buy in the developers and the business community to help. Here, we sort of have to start at ground zero to build that support and get the grassroots, the people, to agree they got to pay.
Yeah, I think traditional conservatives are probably going to stay like away from this fight or this conversation until they kind of, you know, put their finger in the air and decide which way the wind is blowing. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to Dr. Green and the school board to sort of marshal their promotional plan in order to sell this project, especially if the need is really there.
Yeah. And, you know, somebody else in the group just mentioned, I think it was you, Charles, in addition to paying to have decent buildings for kids to go to school in, the issue of teacher pay is also top of mind. And teachers are continuing to push for better pay in Florida. As all of this is happening, school safety also made news this week. Circuit Court Judge Robert Dees here in Jacksonville is going to decide in a few weeks whether there are grounds to go forward with a first-of-its-kind lawsuit in Florida. Parents here in Jacksonville say having armed guards on public school campuses rather than sworn police officers is unlawful. Yes, local parents have sued after Duval decided to hire what they call SSAs, school safety assistants, guards, over additional police for the county's 107 elementary schools. Duval, this gets back to money, says it just doesn't have the funding to put a police officer at every single elementary school. Duval County is one of about a dozen districts in the state that is going the route of hiring lower paid, lesser trained guards over police. But Duval is the only school district in Florida to face a lawsuit as a result. AG Gankarski is all this is going on in Duval. At the same time, this week, the Florida State Senate approved a measure that would permit teachers to carry firearms on school grounds if local school boards agree. That is likely to pass the legislature, although many school boards around Florida, including our Duval school board say they are not going to do that. So, you know, school safety is obviously top of mind for parents and educators right now.
Right. And you are seeing what happens when budgets are starved on a local level. I mean, the state Senate bill regarding arming teachers, these are sheriff-trained volunteer teachers. So it's not going to be you get orientation and get your gun. It's going to be people who actually get trained to do this. However, you know, given what happens in classrooms, there are obvious concerns. What happens if, you know, there's a ruckus in the classroom? What happens if a teacher feels challenged? I mean, does a teacher stand his ground? These questions come into play. But, you know, regarding Duval County, this is an issue about $7 million or so. And this is another indication of how cash-strapped the district is. They made the choice to go with the guards to make a fraction of what police officers make. It is challengeable. It does raise questions. And it's something that, again, in a state legislature continues to pass unfunded mandates regarding education, and this continues to affect districts. And there seems to be no recourse given the Republican lean in both houses.
Yeah, this is the result of bad legislation from the start from Tallahassee, because like AG mentioned, this is an unfunded mandate. They never laid out a plan in order for the districts in order to deal with this. And other than, you know, go forth and fund on your own. And that just complicates things on a local level. We're hearing about all types of different scenarios on how districts are dealing with this. And it doesn't make any sense. I don't think anyone, especially these parents, don't feel any safer with any of this legislation and any of these changes and laws and policies when it comes to school safety. This is not working, period. It's a bad idea.
Emily Block, yeah. Teachers overwhelmingly say they don't want to carry firearms on school grounds. If this legislation makes it into law, local school boards, charter school governing boards would then vote on whether to authorize teachers to be armed on individual school campuses.
Correct.
And so, you know, we'll be discussing this, by the way, for the full hour at noon on the Florida Roundup, because obviously school boards around the state are wanting to weigh in on this issue.
Well, based on my reporting so far, Duval's already saying no. They crafted a resolution last year where they said that they strongly don't support deputizing teachers or school personnel. They want armed responders instead, and they want sworn law enforcement personnel. And other counties are following suit. Some of them are still on the fence, and it depends on things like Governor Ron DeSantis and his incentivizing the Guardian program and its expansion. But really, a lot of it is just untreaded water, obviously.
Well, you know, on April 5th at St. Joseph at School in Milwaukee, a teacher's gun went off accidentally and actually bruised a student. That teacher has since been fired. A year ago in Georgia, a teacher's gun went off. And just a few months ago, a Jacksonville sheriff's officer outside of one of the Duval County schools, they're doing a search during an alert. That officer's gun went off. So accidents happen. And the concern is the level, as AG said, of training is important. I believe 20% of the training of a Jacksonville sheriff's officer is what's going to these new security people. And they don't have a lot of power. So,
well, Emily, it also brings to mind, how do students feel about it? Because in 2012 at the Episcopal School in Jacksonville, there was a teacher that brought a firearm to class. And those students are still in their early years of college and dealing with this and had to deal with lockdown since then and lockdown training. And so I spoke to students that were at the Episcopal School when that shooting happened.
Yeah, he walked into the principal's office.
Correct.
And he took her out, and he also took out another school official.
Yes.
And there should have been enough warning signs because he had been fired.
He was fired that morning.
Yeah.
Something else that's come up a lot, parents of African-American children are worried about teachers being armed because they feel that their children might in danger.
Absolutely.
Danger than white kids.
When you're talking about school discipline, it's a fact that African-American students, are, especially boys, males, are disciplined on a higher level than in other students. And so add to that mix the tension and the trauma that goes along with a teacher being armed, or a teacher or a school safety assistant being armed, and you got a recipe for disaster. And that's why parents don't feel safe in this scenario. And I think what's probably going to happen, as we see this plan being implemented, you're going to see a lot of people taking their children out of the public school system because they don't feel safe in that circumstances.
Well, we want to hear from parents, teachers, everybody about, as we talk about school funding and school safety, everything from arming teachers in the classroom to pushing through a half-cent sales tax in Duval to pay for better school buildings. What do you think? It's 549-2937. Andy is in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Andy, happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning to you all. Charles said a key word to me talking about school budgeting, and it was priority. And I'm just wondering where this priority has been over the last two or three decades. I mean, the elected school board officials didn't see this coming, you know, over the last few years, didn't see the fact of the lack of maintenance occurring in our current schools is going to be a problem down the road. While I guess there's no other solution to it than a sales tax increase, I'm getting tired of the solution constantly being more taxes. So yeah. I'm wondering
what would you prefer, Andy? What would you rather see?
Well, it's financial oversight, fiscal responsibility. This is it sounds like a rainy day that's finally come, and nobody's planned or budgeted for a rainy day fund.
Well, I mean, but if schools are underfunded to begin with, and inevitably physical plants decline,
then it goes to leadership. Leadership needs to own it. They need to come out and say, hey, over the last two decades, obviously the elected officials who've been running our schools, i.e. the school board, basically hasn't had a clue as to what they're doing. I mean, that's kind of the conclusion that I'm coming to here.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your thoughts, Andy. At the same time, I think the school board is limited in their ability to levy. They're going down the one path that they fiscally have, although we have a tweet here from Ann pointing out, a sales tax is not the only option. Duval needs to implement impact fees from development.
I'm sure Newcastle will get on it.
Yeah, we are one of only 5 to 6 counties in the state that doesn't collect these fees. Hillsborough doesn't either, and they have maxed out their bonds. And so to answer Andy's question, the schools are starved for cash in part because the priorities of the rest of city government don't allow for things like impact fees for development that would better fund education. That's just one element here, but it's an important one.
Yeah, if you're dealing with like 50-year-old buildings, if you're dealing with like something like Jackson where there are roof leaks and administrative offices that go back years, if you're dealing with like issues like Rebalt Rains, the other schools that were pre-consolidation, and you have a school board that realizes that referendums are ways that you actually get money. I mean, they got pension reform that way. It's a very similar thing. Worked in St. John's County. So, I mean, this may be bad timing for some people out there, but for the school district, this is worse timing because they have a lot of physical plant that is unworkable. They've got to figure out things regarding consolidating facilities, and they need the money to actually move. And if they don't have that capital, it's going to be a lost generation.
Taryn is in South Jacksonville. Taryn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just don't know who it is in government that are making these decisions that really I think younger parents of like the next generation should be making for this state. You know, I'm here visiting my parents. I've moved out of the state in order to find work. And when I heard this stuff about, you know, teachers having guns in school, I was like, well, listen, I'm never going to raise my children in this state. I mean, the education system here is already criminally underfunded. But to put like, I mean, and it is, it's a racist kind of thing to put guns in schools. I mean, this is the state that let George Zimmerman get away with murder. It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. I'm wondering who it is that's coming up with these policies, because it doesn't seem to be young parents at all.
Yeah, thank you, Taryn.
I mean, they should be giving more money.
Thank you, Taryn.
Not guns.
I hear your points. And the policy, actually, it began as a recommendation. Arming teachers was a recommendation of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission that was formed after the mass shooting at MSD High School in Parkland, Florida. The state legislature has embraced this idea over the objections of the Parkland activists, teacher unions, and parent groups, and they are proceeding with this legislation, Emily Block. It is likely to pass. It's passing the Senate. It's likely to pass the State House. Governor DeSantis has indicated he supports the idea. And so for those that are opposed to this idea, this is just another example of how elections have consequences.
Correct.
And so in choosing who to vote for, We have a legislature that is going to almost certainly pass this proposal, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, with the exception of Representative Flores, it looks like pretty much the entire vote went down party lines. So, and I think it's also worth noting that this is an expansion of an already existing act. So the Guardian Act before this new legislation had already covered arming faculty and staff, but not teachers. Now this expansion would extend it to also arming teachers. And that was a concept that a lot of the Parkland survivors and their victims, surviving families, were already not really embracing with open arms, but they were willing to live with it. However, this, what we have to recognize is that this bill also includes other things. So this new bill includes expanding mental health care provided at schools. It also includes better violence culpability in reporting. So I think that's why it is getting hesitant support, because it's just, it's including so many things in one package. They don't want to kill the bill completely.
Harry in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Harry. You're on the air.
Hi. Just a brief history lesson. I'm afraid your folks on your panel are too young to remember this. But in the mid-60s...
Dan Scanlon's shaking his head. But go ahead, Harry. Okay.
62.
Well, then he'll know what I'm talking about. In the mid-60s, our schools were discredited because of the physical condition of the school,
right,
and the archaic textbooks, and because nobody would fund education. They still don't. And we're headed down that road again. And no, we don't hear about the schools being in bad condition until they actually fall down. Mm-hmm. They're not falling down yet, but they will. And so wherever they need to get the money, we need to get the money, and we need a lot more money. And that's, pay attention to history. It repeats itself.
That's right, Harry. It does. And I think you're right in that things have to reach a crisis point before we see
those
a real response.
Those
Harry,
long-term plans that some politicians may have had, some board members or city council members for that matter, may have had to help and support education. Whenever you talk about or given just any hint that you may need additional revenue in order to get things done, they send you home. You know, they run someone against you and they say you're not a fiscal conservative. And so long-term planning does not mean investment in this community. And that does not, it hasn't come one in the same. You know, it's always been we're investing now for the future. But when you look at people's situations like the schools and how, you know, we watched them deteriorate over the years, and teachers' pay just kind of level out and decline in some cases. There hasn't been any political will in order to get that done, not from the elected officials and really up to this point, not from the community. So maybe both of them will come together and see if change will happen.
You know, growth has driven school construction in our neighboring counties because they're suburbs of Jacksonville. They've been able to anticipate off the census and other demographics that the need was there. In Jacksonville, somehow the age of our schools, which are older than some of our area counties, has not been recognized. But I have seen those Duval County school repair trucks out and about for years, obviously tending to age-related problems at many of these schools. So why didn't we hear about this? And I'll say it again. Why have we not heard about this more often, so that maybe 5 years ago there could have been a step-by-step advanced plan planning out the next 20 years?
We've heard. We just haven't had the political will to do it.
But it's not been done and then funded or at least looked for funding.
And let me get lots of feedback on the air from emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Here is an email from a local teacher named Chris. Sadly, this isn't even the worst bill that passed. The voucher expansion and forcing localities to share millage increases or additional sales tax with charters, I think, is even worse. Let's go to Twitter, where Larry tweets the show. There have been multiple amendments introduced that would allow parents to opt their kids out of any class where a teacher was armed. The House and Senate rejected it each time. Julie tweets the show. The entire state has gone down the NRA rabbit hole. We've deputized everyone, and Florida is everyone's castle. Despite Florida having recounts in razor-thin statewide races, the GOP dominates because of gerrymandering. Wake me up for redistricting, referring to gerrymandered districts and how that results in a very conservatively dominated state legislature. Here is a Facebook comment from Jeff, where's this additional money going? Low-income people spend almost all of the money they earn. A sales tax would impact every dollar they spend. Why don't we raise property taxes instead to pay for schools? The idea that a sales tax is a regressive tax for lower-income people. That argument has come up many times. It came up when Mayor Curry pushed through a sales tax to pay for pension debt. And the property tax idea, like these other ideas that the panel has discussed, there's not political will to pass it.
Well, we look at that sales tax because it seems fair because, you know, you got more people coming in and out of the community.
Right. So and tourists would share it as well.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the reason why there. And we don't think of half cents as a lot of money, but it is. But if we knew what the results are going to be, what the outcomes are going to be, and a well put together plan, I think people would probably buy it, even if it is, and like the caller said, regressive. I'm sorry.
And it looks like we have a student from Fletcher on the line. It's Ireland. Ireland, good morning. What year are you in school?
Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning.
Say again?
Are you still at Fletcher?
Yes, I am currently on a modified schedule, so I am waiting for my next period in my parking lot.
Okay. Well, all what right. do you think about all of this?
So going from Fletcher, which is an old school, you constantly see, like, leaks, and our AC is constantly breaking. And we last year, we went through several blackouts throughout the entire school. So that is an extreme issue, and I know that from personal experience, my teachers end up having to pay for paper and for Scantrons just to take tests, and a lot of teachers are actually have stopped printing stuff and just went to online, and we have to do everything on our laptops. So the issue with school funding is not only affecting our education, but like it's affecting our teachers' well-being as teachers. But then from secondary to that, the new legislation passing through the Florida Senate is extremely terrifying because I know in Jacksonville we don't do this, but or we might not do this. And students are already afraid of having a school shooter come in, and that's from personal experience. And I have friends who went to the Episcopal shooting, and I've had a friend who used to live down in from Parkland.
Mm-hmm.
So the students are genuinely have a fear of going to school because of this. And no student or teacher, I don't think, would ever feel safe with a teacher being armed just because we've had so much issues with that already in the past. And to expand that would only cause more issues and more accidents to occur.
And that's what the teachers are telling you and your fellow students at Fletcher?
Yes. Yeah. And, shockingly, our students are quite politically aware at my school. So we talk about stuff like this, and I don't hear any support. We want something to be fixed. We want to have safer schools, but we don't think that arming teachers and causing teachers to have such like liability in their arms is way too high of a risk for most of our students.
When do you graduate?
I'm graduating this year. I'll be attending FSU.
Okay. Well, good luck there. And thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Of course, this is ostensibly all about the students. So it's good to hear from a student at Fletcher High School. Ireland is on the line out at the beach. Thanks for sharing your opinion, Ireland. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
A few years ago, one of the Fletcher campuses did have a report of a minivan with a bunch of people with guns pulling up in front. And I was at the school, as you could hear their loudspeaker system putting the school on lockdown, parents trying to get in, freaked out parents around me. So even if that was a fake issue, as he was saying, it's still a scary prospect that somebody comes in with a gun. We know it's happened elsewhere. Kids are showing up with guns multiple times every year in Duval County schools.
And let's point out that all Duval County high schools will have metal detectors or wands so that people coming in and out will be checked.
Yeah, I've heard from teacher after teacher that they can't believe that after thoughtful adults put their head together, this is the best solution they came up with.
Lots of calls on this. Let's take a few more of your calls here on the show and then we'll move on. Bobby is on the north side. Bobby, good morning.
Good morning, y'all. Very interesting conversation. I have a couple of unique perspectives about this. I attended Rebolt and graduated from Raines. And this discussion about keeping both schools, you know, most people are aware that Rebolt and Raines were built as the last vestige of separate but equal. Those schools were so close together that when you come to school at Rebolt, we hear the band practicing over at Raines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those need to be consolidated. Also work in the school in my work capacity. And, you know, there becomes a point of diminishing returns on repairs. And at a certain point, you have to replace the facility to make it cost effective. And that's what we need to do. And the comment about the city school board being more proactive, well, they've been dealing with shortfalls and cuts in budget, unfunded mandates forever. And it's not going to change. Impact fees would be the way to go, but, you know, Duval County refuses to do them because, quote, unquote, this build, baby, build. But all these counties around us all have impact fees, and these people are moving from Jacksonville and raising their children and coming back to Jacksonville after their children get out of school because our schools are so substandard and so underfunded. So when you live in a new area and they build a new school, you don't really see the harm. But these legacy neighborhoods are really being impacted by this shortfall.
Thanks for that, Bobby, and some great points coming in from the north side this morning. Thanks for your call. Emmett is out near Mayport. Emmett, are you a former teacher? Is that right?
Yes, I was.
Okay, what do you think?
Are we on the air?
Yeah, go ahead.
I got out of the Navy in the 70s, and I taught at what is now Fletcher Junior High, which was originally Fletcher Senior High. It's three blocks in the ocean, large rooms, windows. Every room has windows. It had you can cool it without the use of air conditioning. Then I taught at Mayport, which was a disaster. It was a modern building, new design, and everyone had a sinus infection one year because the cooling system was what they used which contributed Legionnaire's disease. Then I taught at Fletcher Senior, okay, which was like being put in these little boxes, rooms with no windows. Not a good place where you want to spend year after year after year after year as a teacher on low pay. So I talked to you the other day about the new city, the new design for the future. We need to look down the road for school systems that can handle kids that can't go to school legally anymore but want to. You need to look at buildings like that can be quickly adjusted. Take a whole section of building out, a little red schoolhouse, and put another one next to it. And these would be schools that could be put in on different levels, but it would mean that the repair, like the fellow was just talking about, these major repairs to the air conditioning, the cooling, they wouldn't have to be made. Why? Because you take the whole unit out and you put a whole new unit in. And having taught in those little, what do they call them, you know, 20, 30 kid classrooms.
Portable classrooms.
Yeah, portables, sure.
That was the best experience of my life. Hmm. I ended up teaching gifted, and one of the greatest things about having the independence of my own room, my own area, was that I could control it as a teacher, which a lot of teachers really want. Leave us alone, let us teach what you want us to teach, but let me have control of my space. In the old Mayport, when Mayport first opened, there were no walls between the rooms. I shared a room with a Spanish teacher, and it was difficult. So the people who design the future school buildings, they need to deal with not only the physical plant where the teacher is going to sit and spend his 20, 30 years, but they need to make it easily repairable. Plus, they need to bring in the kids that aren't being taught, and they need to look down the road 25 years. Because the way we use electronics right now, we could completely change
education. A lot of needs. Yes, a lot of considerations.
Some bright people in a think tank put it together and then present it to the people.
Thank you, Emmett. And it's always good to get the perspective of someone who's actually taught school.
Emmett. That said, Florida has been known for years as being a state full of portable farms that you go past schools and you've got the one original school building and you've got 50 portables. Mm-hmm. And there's security issues with that. There was an issue last week in St. Johns County where a portable classroom burned to the ground and damaged two others. And who knows why, but so there are pros and cons. Portables, obviously, modular, fixable.
Yeah. I think it was interesting to hear his thoughts that he actually liked teaching in one because he had more autonomy. But look, it's such a hot topic. We could keep going and going, but we do need to make note of some other headlines from the week. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Emily Block, A.G. Gankarski, Charles Griggs, and Dan Scalin, and myself, and your calls. As we move ahead, the number to join us, 549-2937. A few other news and notes from the week. The Jacksonville Business Journal this week reported that a local CEO who was recently ousted from his firm after allegations of financial impropriety made donations to Mayor Curry's reelection campaign and PAC at the same time he was negotiating to get city incentives. In 2017, after less than a year in business, the company Shared Labs, Inc. threatened to move its headquarters away from Jacksonville unless it received incentives to stay. Some strong arming from this company, Charles Griggs, which the JBJ opened the curtain to show the kind of lengths to which donors may sometimes go to get what they want in exchange for their political donation.
I don't think that people are surprised by anything like this. This is the way business is done typically, right? You kind of figure out a way to get access to the areas you need to have access in order for you to be able to do business in the particular area. This is, while, you know, this stops short of anybody doing anything illegal, it certainly doesn't look like, didn't look good on the surface for business practices. So, you know, if you were to say to a community where you know they're providing incentives, that's their habit, that's what the, you know, what the city does, hey, we're thinking about moving unless you help us out. I mean, I that's been done over and over and over again. And so certainly this time, you know, we get a chance to, you know, get more information about
more information about what really happens.
But certainly this is not the first time someone said that to the city or representatives seeking incentives.
Yeah. No comment from City Hall about any of this. You know, I would encourage everyone to read this story because it gives you a sense of what really goes on behind closed doors in terms of how political donations are driving
and
so much of this.
A donation is cheap.
Yeah.
For a mega-million-dollar company to make. And it doesn't mean that anybody in Curry's administration knew or even noticed it was anything more than another large donation. But it's a cheap way of doing business in the hopes of maybe impacting or influencing somewhere, you hope.
And the embezzlement allegations certainly don't look great.
Well, the CEO's gone, so.
They took action immediately when the board took action when they found out that he was, you know, looking kind of unscrupulous.
Okay. How about this, guys? Based on multiple reports of early season algae blooms along the St. John's River, it looks like we might be in for another monster, green monster, slimy summer. For water enthusiasts and fishermen, this is not good news. We are talking about massive algae blooms already in Palatka, Wilatka, Satsuma, areas around Lake George. Emily Block, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, just last week found algae blooms as far north as Arlington River in Jacksonville, Julington Creek, near the Guana River 6 mile boat ramp. It's April, and we are already seeing algae blooms. We have gotten used to, sadly, seeing them in the summer months, but now we're seeing them in the spring months. Good news.
It's the primary rainbow. We had red algae, and now we have green algae. Can't wait to see what's next. But I think what's really concerning is that it's April, like you said, and they're already finding low levels of harmful toxins in water samples. So that's just a terrifying to think, a terrifying thought.
And traditionally, we've been getting it from the central Florida section where the farmers have been using fertilizer, which means all this is runoff from the recent heavy rains. And it's just a matter of time before it starts blooming even further into the St. John's and further out toward Arlington and Mayport, et cetera.
So we've known this, and yet no one's done anything. And I think that's, this is the question people are asking, is what are you going to do about it? Session's about to end shortly, and we haven't seen any real policy put in place to make sure this doesn't start to reverse itself.
That means fish kills at some point, and maybe that will be the turning point when we have a lot of dead fish in the green slime.
We've had fish kills.
I know, but I'm talking the big ones, and the neighbors in the rich communities suddenly go, they don't want this on their back doorstep.
Sure. These toxic green algae blooms kill fish. They make it impossible to, obviously, you don't want to swim in through this water. It's not a lot of fun to boat or water ski through this water. This affects many aspects of our tourism-based economy. It affects our ecosystem. It's a combination of pollutants going into the St. John's River, despite efforts in recent years to reduce the flow of pollutants going into the river by JEA and other players. Combination of that and also climate change. A warming planet does not help these algae blooms.
Warm winter we've had means things are growing, and probably farmers were putting that fertilizer down earlier, and the runoff, they're not containing it.
And it looks gross.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's not the green you want. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That green slime just rippling across.
Yeah, Emily, I mean, it's just so awful to see it.
It's not pleasant.
Not at all. Okay, on a more pleasant note for football fans, last night was draft night in Duval as the Jaguars picked Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen. Meanwhile, scores of fans showed up at the bank for draft night festivities. A big crowd to have a chance to participate in all the excitement. So let's talk for a little bit about the Jaguars draft pick. Charles, Allen is expected to fly with his family to Jacksonville this morning and meet the team.
You know, it's always an exciting time to participate and watch the draft. The draft is really entertainment for entertainment and promotional purposes only. And I say that because if you look at the Jaguars in the last 11 picks, the last 11 years, they've had 10 top 10 picks. Out of those 10 top 10 picks, only one, Jalen Ramsey, has made it to the Pro Bowl. So this is not an exact science. And, you know, pretty much, Dan, you or I could do this. We could throw a dart against the
board. No, because I am not a knowledgeable football person. But I will tell you, obviously, somebody who can sack, who has that amount of record in college, that would be very good, especially with whom they say that he's going to team up with. So we could have some formidable action on the field, preventing the other guys from getting anything done.
But they said that about Derek Harvey, too.
And we can hope.
First-round bust.
Josh Allen seems promising. I mean, he had 17 sacks last year.
Yeah.
He fell to 7. It kind of reminds me of when Ramsey fell to 5. It's someone that we didn't think we might get, but here we are. So.
And how do you like the season? I mean, every season it seems as though we go through this cycle, if you're a Jaguars fan, where there's a little bit of a burst of excitement and then this cynicism sets in where, you know, it can get kind of depressing after a while.
Well, I think that we benefit from having great fans in this market. So, you know, regardless of the size of the market, you know, people love the Jaguars. The problem has been is that winning consistently in order to satisfy that urge has not been, has not been happening. So I think people would rather have 2017 over 2018. We can just get halfway there most of the time, then you can keep this fan base happy. But that, you know, that's it. You know, win and everything else works. If they consistently win 9-10 games a season, you wouldn't hear any complaints out of folks. Go to the playoffs every other year.
That's right.
Compete for a Super Bowl.
Let's win some games. Yeah. And let's have a great weekend for all of you. I hope that you have a wonderful weekend. We thank you for spending some of your Friday with us. Emily Block, A.G. Gankarski, Dan Scanlon, and Charles Griggs. Thanks, guys, so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
And up next, raising awareness and funds for people on the First Coast living with ALS. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Malignant mesothelioma. Asbestos dust causes this cancer. Learn more from board-certified civil trial specialist Wayne Hogan at waynehogan.law. Florida Prepaid. For 30 years, Florida Prepaid has been helping Florida families save for college. There are college plans for every budget, and prepaid plans are guaranteed by the state of Florida. Open enrollment ends April 30th. Florida Prepaid. Starting is believing.
President Trump has spoken to the National Rifle Association before.
You have an administration fighting to protect your Second Amendment.
His speech to the group today comes as gun owners give mixed reviews of the administration's record on the Second Amendment. I'm Ari Shapiro, Trump and the NRA, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, what you should know about the measles outbreaks.
There is a risk of larger outbreaks, and we cannot discount the risk of a national level outbreak.
Plus, National Poetry Month is almost over, and we finish it with a flurry, a celebration of the cosmos in verse. All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
America turns the screw to turn off Iranian oil.
Any nation or entity interacting with Iran should do its diligence and err on the side of caution.
Also, the Easter bombings in Sri Lanka spark fears of a new ISIS resurgence. An epic story dominates India's election, and Ukraine elects a comedian. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it's a fun evening dedicated to finding treatment and a cure for ALS, also once known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Here with more, we welcome Noelle Marks, Marketing Director for Orange Theory Fitness, and joining us by phone, Sharon Siegel-Cohen, a producer at WJXT Channel 4. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, Sharon, good morning.
Good morning.
Sharon, let's start with you. You are receiving the Courage Award at this event. It's coming up May 4th at the Aetna Building on Jacksonville South Bank. And of course, as many people around town know, you were diagnosed with ALS and are dealing with the disease and continuing to work and showing enormous courage and fortitude. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and what's hoped to accomplish at this event?
Well, one of the things I have learned in dealing with this journey of mine is how many courageous people there are out there. You know, you when you think of courage, you think of the firefighters, the police, our military. But there are people every day courageously dealing with this with dignity and just such grace. They're really an inspiration. I hope with this, this is for Augie's Quest. And Augie Nieto is the founder of Life Fitness, who 14 years ago was diagnosed with ALS. So it's a fundraiser for him. And it's all about research to find a cure for this disease. So I hope that that will accomplish a lot and they will raise the money to go towards that.
That's right. Noelle Marks, you are marketing director for Orange Theory Fitness. You are involved with the event as well. And ALS is a devastating neurodegenerative disease. But of course, for activists like Augie and Sharon Siegel-Cohen who are dealing with the disease, what they've learned is it's underfunded. More funding could lead to better treatments and a breakthrough and
absolutely.
A cure.
Absolutely. Sharon, we were at Sharon's walk a couple weeks ago and she made mention that it's been 80 years since Lou Gehrig was diagnosed, and why haven't we made a step forward yet? So with Augie's Quest, though, they were able, and Orange Theory, as a nation, their funding that they contributed, they were actually able to put their drug AT-1501 into human clinical trials.
That's great. And this, all the money raised, Sharon, at this event will support the ALS Therapy Development Institute that is driving a lot of innovative science around treatment of this disease. Isn't that right?
Yes, and what's amazing about Augie, he's still alive 14 years later. There was a documentary on him about Augie's Quest. And in watching it, he communicates with his toe. He has this elaborate computer system. And I've corresponded with him, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, that's how he's typing with the one toe that I guess he still has control of. So it's just an incredible man and an incredible event that he's taken to raising money for this.
Now, tell me a little bit about you, Sharon. You have so many fans and supporters all over town. You've been a producer at Channel 4 for decades, and you are working. You're calling us from Channel 4 right now, actually, I think.
That's right.
Continuing to produce and add your amazing talents to that newsroom every day.
Thank you. I'm still producing. I am pretty much in a wheelchair these days, a little power wheelchair that I zip around the newsroom. It's kind of funny. Since I last talked to you, though, now I do have an elaborate ramp at my house because I needed that. And I had said that I still drive. Well, this weekend as we speak, we're converting the car to hand controls because I do feel more weakness in my foot that I was able to drive before. So I took a class. I am certified to drive with hand controls. So if you see me around town in my car, that's what I'll be using.
I got it. And I salute you. And I hope everybody can do whatever they can to support Augie's quest. Now, Noel, this is happening not this Saturday, but next Saturday, May 4th, a gala at the Aetna building, which is a beautiful building.
Yes.
What all is on tap for this evening?
Oh, it's going to be a great night. So we have Bruce Hamilton, who's a coworker of Sharon's.
Anchor at Channel 4.
Yes, he is going to be our MC for the night. We have some little surprises I can't give away because we want to keep some things secret from Miss Sharon. And we have a beautiful silent auction. We just had to up our seats to 290 because we were selling out. So we only have about 60 left right now. And then we're ending the night with the Boogie Freaks on the river. So,
oh, how fun is that? Now, how can people get their tickets?
OTFJax.com.
OTFJax.com.
Yes.
For Orange Theory Fitness. Get your tickets for next Saturday's gala at the Aetna building, supporting Augie's quest and a cure for ALS. Noel Marks with OTF and Sharon Siegel-Cohen, my colleague in journalism, on the line from across the river at WJXT Channel 4. You'll be receiving a Courage Award at this event, and it's so well-deserved, Sharon. So thank you for sharing more of your story with us this morning.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you, Sharon. Both. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. 1A is up next, and make sure to listen in again at noon. The Florida Roundup will take calls and tweets from across the state as we devote the full hour to the state Senate proposal looking at arming teachers in Florida classrooms, even though many teachers and school boards say they don't plan to implement this idea. That's coming up at noon. Meanwhile, this show will be back at 9 a.m. Monday morning. Have a safe and wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.